The War When It Started For Me by Al Gilding. Maine, 1941. There had been some talk that a war might be coming, but that seemed rather vague and ephemeral, far away, more like the books I read. Uncle Will, a kind of familiar term my younger brother and I were persuaded to use in a third foster home setting, always listened to the nightly news on the new radio, as well as weather reports and such, and then, later on in the evening, Amos and Andy. There were hints that the president would call up a draft. It seemed to be of a different kind of draft than anything that I knew about. The only draft that I'd ever been in was in the winter, and this was only fall, and still warm for this time of year. But it was different, and it was winter, and the winter had also been different, mild. Young men like Don might have to go away, which brought on Uncle Will's usual reply when he felt real disgust. What a bunch of foolishness. We knew that it must be disgustingly so, because of the way that he spit it out. The weekend was coming up, and it was time again for the Sunday afternoon ride, which had become kind of an expected thing, but it seemed a little late in the year. Usually it was to visit a relative, but this time, it was going to be just for the ride. "While we still can," Uncle Will had grumbled, having just heard even more distressing rumors about possible shortages of things. Aunt Nellie had more than me and my frailties to worry about now, and she seemed almost happy to be at the task. Her youngest son might have to go. As the English experience in the Battle of Britain had already shown us, even from such a great distance, war was hell. This time, our ride would take us north of where we usually would have gone to see if the snow has come yet. Then a look at a couple of the small lakes, called ponds in Maine, to see if they had already frozen over. Then maybe a quick stop at the relatives, and then home by the usual route, which always meant fried clams. Aunt Nellie seemed happier than usual. And as for me? Maybe a little more of that beautiful music if I was lucky enough. The very thought took me back to another time not so long ago. These visits had all seemed kind of like formal affairs to my younger brother Reg and me. This may have been our first trip there, because I couldn't remember having been there before. Or was it just that none of the earlier trips were as memorable? Either way, it wasn't their first time. Old Uncle Will and Aunt Nellie, the third foster home couple we'd been taken to from that difficult home situation, had been making these trips long before we'd come to stay with them. First, there was the Sunday afternoon car ride, and then the greetings from their relatives, and a happy chatter time followed by the offer of refreshment, which we boys always favored. Then, more sedate adult reminiscing about other times and places that we hadn't been part of. After a while, it made me feel like fidgeting, but of course, I knew better. Another of Uncle Will's favorites was, "Children were meant to be seen, not heard." These relatives had a daughter, pretty but somewhat older, who sat demurely silent at the fringe of the adult gathering, smiling sweetly at the occasional attempts of humor of her elders. As conversation would dwindle, the next part of the visit would be offered, entertainment, some of whatever was available. This time, it would be a piano recital. Their daughter, at first looking a little anxiously at her father, arose and politely conducted everyone into a smaller room, beyond the door of which sat an upright piano with chairs ringing the other side of the room. We children were to sit on the floor at the front of the chairs, which was all right with me. I had always liked music, whatever the kind, it seemed. The first piece she quietly announced would be Brahms's Lullaby. I took notice. The name seemed to strike a long, silent chord of familiarity, and as the first notes tinkled out, the vision of an ancient music box replayed in a long-forgotten memory. The beauty of her rendition blended into a kind of counterpoint to a refrain that I could feel but couldn't remember. I sat spellbound with a strange kind of melancholy overcoming me as it ended. Polite applause followed, but I could not even raise my hands to join in. Other songs followed in a leisurely display of her accomplished repertoire, but somehow I hadn't been able to get beyond the introductory offering. Then other songs followed that rang again in a more familiar refrain. At the end, a more newly remembered "Red Sails in the Sunset" swelled from that instrument with the authority of repetition. This time, I could find my hands and joined in with a wonderingly joyous enthusiasm. Now, in a slow trickle, all left to regather in another part of the house. But I still sat, not willing to break the spell of such an enchanting moment. The piano sang again to me in my mind.
That last song. It called out to me to come up and sit where she had. It encouraged me to caress its keys as she had, and ever so slowly I tried, softly striking a single note. Then, one note after the other, the melody came through. My concentration was immense. "Red sails in the sunset, way out over the sea. Oh, bring back my loved one, home safely to me." I was aware of nothing else until a hand touched my shoulder. I was startled into the sudden realization that I had just committed a grave breach of etiquette. I had not asked permission, but that soft voice only inquired, "Have you had any lessons?" I just shrugged my shoulders, and another hand touched the other shoulder. My face and neck felt hot from the embarrassment of discovery. Had I not realized that this instrument would have clearly announced my effort to others in the house? "Have you ever tried to play before?" This time, a sound came forth in a negative reply. Her hands lifted, slowly crossing in front of me. They came to rest again where the other had been. A most personal embrace as she spoke again. "You did very well." Her voice, for just a moment, reminded me again of that ancient music box, her hands, that of another's loving caress, at a time somehow beyond the clarity of conscious recall. That old, strangely familiar melancholy seemed to enfold us within itself so overwhelmingly as to elicit a shudder from out of a time before memory. I know that the visit came to an end, but I seemed only to continue there mostly in body, my mind occupied by that oddly powerful sentiment. There were added words of encouragement from her, I'm sure. I so wanted to believe, but the voice of my better judgment would not be smothered. And all too soon, we were on our bumpy, jouncy, spring-screechy way home. Uncle Will's car had never known the benefit of grease since he'd bought it. The next time, though, the car seemed to ride a little smoother, and the springs hardly squeaked at all. I had seen Don puttering around it not too long before, but it was at a distance, and I was almost too busy to take account of it at the time. The ponds were too cold to wade in, and anyway had almost uniformly muddy bottoms, and, as memory served, an occasional small, half-buried twig that would bring you up lame for at least a couple steps, even in the summer. Then, no snow here either. It was on to the relatives. I tried to imagine what it was that she might be ready to play this time. Whatever she chose, it would have that touch of her sweetness added to it. I was just looking out the window watching the scenery go by when a daydream drifted in. She was sure to ask me to sit with her this time. My heart skipped a beat at the very thought. Maybe we would play a duet. After all, I had not missed a note the first time. Maybe it would be Brahms again. As that beautifully melancholic melody tickled its way over my mental ear, it came as a vaguely different feeling imposed itself. I was playing, and she was listening, with a delightfully astonished look on her lovely features. That ancient music box again led me with its sadly melancholic rendition interwoven with mine. As the last of the notes dissolved into the scenery, a squeaky brake sonata intruded. We were there. Of course, I wouldn't really be doing anything like my daydream, but it had been nice just to think that it might have been possible. We were welcomed as usual, but there was a certain element of surprise as they quickly exchanged looks. There was much to talk about, but it became increasingly difficult for me to keep my anticipation under control. "Where is she?" my desperately inquisitive brain inquired. I tried to look around, as if I were politely bored. She always helped with the welcoming. I had heard the main elements of the conversation before, more than once. I tried not to look as if I were extending my gaze out into the kitchen. "She felt that she needed to go visit her aunt," her mother was saying. What? Had I almost missed the most important part of the conversation? Not here? Her cousin volunteered as soon as he'd heard the first rumors, it seems. She has always been a great comfort to her auntie in other times of stress, like when her uncle had taken sick. Sick? I was sick. Not here? And not likely to be? The ghost of old Herbert, of our second foster home experience, slipped into my thoughts at the very mention of sick. He had looked like he was finally going to say something. Then suddenly, I was mentally gone. On to our first place. Now it was the husband here. He had been in such pain. Was it like mine right now? I knew that I ought to have been ashamed of myself. It had been much worse for him, and I knew that. I could still see the anguish in her eyes. Was she still that way? A sudden, morose kind of sadness overwhelmed me at the thought of where he might be now. Was this what old Herbert had been going to tell me? I know that Grandma had told us, and the church schools had too, but it had all seemed so kind of unreal. But this is right here, and this is me, my thoughts insisted. I know how disappointed you must be, but it couldn't be helped, you see. Her mother was speaking directly to me, looking right at me, right through me. What had happened? She must have seen my disappointment. The mask had slipped. Had she been able to read my innermost thoughts? How selfish she must think me to be. A most kindly look came into her eyes as she said, "She knows that she won't be able to see her cousin for some time. You understand?" Oh, I understood all right. And who did you think that she thought you were, anyway? My better judgment taunted me, but I only mumbled, "My older brother did that too." "Your older brother?" she asked politely, but I could tell that she wasn't really interested. "Yeah," was all she got in way of explanation, to which Uncle Will observed, "I always did think that children should be more seen than heard." It was suddenly clear to me that it was shut-up time. I was glad that I hadn't said any more than I did. What right did I have to feel disappointed anyway? After all, we weren't family. Her look toward him was of mild disapproval, and the visit ended soon after. Well, I thought, at least there's the fried clams, as Uncle Will negotiated the varied streets and roads to the highway back home. But his unusually deep scowl bothered me, as had the comment about children earlier. I decided that the best way was for me to not say anything at all, even though I thought that I had been the model of silence before. Was it that I'd been the center of attention for less than 3 whole minutes? Reg was his usual self, making an occasional comment on things and places as we passed by. As we turned onto the highway, I caught Uncle Will's quick glance at me through the rearview mirror. Or had that been at the car that suddenly whizzed past us, its horn blaring impatiently? We'd settled into a steady speed by the time that we'd come within a mile or so of where the roadhouse waited impatiently to serve us. By now, I had cast aside all thoughts not connected with those fried clams. We'd had them every time that we had ventured out this way, and the thought seemed especially comforting just now. Suddenly, Uncle Will was talking. "We stayed longer than I had expected to," he began, bringing me reluctantly back to the visit and his scowl. "By the time that I listen to the news, I'll be late to the milking. We'll just go straight on home from here." I sat bolt upright. I must not have heard right. I couldn't possibly have heard all that he had said. Not stop? My brain refused to absorb such an unwanted implication. Aunt Nellie quickly glanced in his direction and as quickly looked away. I looked at Reg. His glare was drilling holes of indignation into the back of Uncle Will's head. Not stop? I had only meant to think that, but it had just slipped out. Not stop? Reg now added, his suddenly pent-up resentment at the announcement bursting forth. Uncle Will just looked straight ahead and drove. He hadn't said a word at our twin outbursts. I was more than indignant. How could anyone in his right mind let this stand without protest? But what could I do that I hadn't already done? And might I have just now gone too far? It was hard to tell. Taking added courage at his silence, I grumbled on about us never having done anything like this before. So why now? Reg carried on with his own brand of indignation for a short while with no noticeable effect. Uncle Will just drove on, and we slowly settled down to the obvious lack of effect that we'd had on him. What was more unusual was he hadn't said a word in response. I'd kind of expected that momentarily the hammer would drop on our insolence, but it hadn't. My thoughts got blacker by the moment. This was by far the worst Sunday we'd ever had. A really bad ending to a very bad day. When we finally came within sight of the roadhouse, I couldn't help it. My yearning eyes searched for some small indication of that which we were about to bypass. A car was coming down the drive and stopped short of entering the road. Uncle Will slowed down as we approached, and then our car lurched as he quickly swung the steering wheel, propelling it into the drive, missing the car by inches, it seemed. Up the driveway? "Well, maybe we'll stop," he said, smiling broadly. "For just a minute." Uncle Will, smiling? Good old Uncle Will. He sure had us fooled that time. We had always waited in the car for him to bring us the fried clams, and this time was no exception. But how I wanted to go with him, even if just to make sure. While he was gone, Aunt Nellie chided us. "When has he ever not treated you boys right?" But I could tell by the timbre of her voice that she too was relieved. Those fried clams had never tasted so good. Good old Uncle Will. He sure had me fooled this time. The levity of the rest of the drive home was in sharp contrast to the moroseness of its beginning. Good old Uncle Will, were there some things that you could count on after all? Home and back to the routine, but happy as a couple of clams full of fried clams, we watched as good old Uncle Will now hurried, in his old man's version of quickness, toward the house and radio just in time for the evening news. I petted good old Brownie Dog a couple of strokes and picked up an armload of wood for the cook stove. I dropped the wood in the box as an exaggerated silence marked the end of the first news item, preceding the beginning of another. And then it came. This just in. In a surprise attack, the Japanese have just bombed Pearl Harbor. Uncle Will grunted. I couldn't believe my ears. They can't do that to us. The shrillness of my voice surprised even me. Did I have an appreciation of what that portended? I had probably heard of other things that would have given a kind of context to that terse announcement. Uncle Will had issued his favorite comment concerning other subjects of interest more than once recently. It's a bunch of foolishness. On those other occasions, having to do with what I later learned had preceded this god-awful news, his comments had been even more caustically assertive. I myself had absorbed this bit of news in a very clearly visceral way, as if all those morbid ghouls that inhabited every dark place that I had ever feared to go near had suddenly jumped out at me, at all of us. It had come close to spoiling the surprise that Virginia had planned for Reg's December 7th birthday. I had almost forgotten, but she had not, and we made a happy time out of an occasion that we all should have known would not come around again anytime soon. Winter had come late that year, but before Christmas, it had given out with its usual bag of tricks. It only lasted through February, with March coming in like a lion. And then there were those trucks. We'd heard a rumbling like we'd never heard before, from a long way off, and had gone down to the road to see what might be coming. Even Don and Bill Bailey, the hired hand who had been with us like forever, came down. The day had been overcast, threatening even, and that had made it hard to see what was in the offing. A small black spot way, way up the road to the west grew slowly, then more quickly, finally turning into a truck, a big truck, with many, many more behind it. Down they came, across the iron bridge over the creek, and up the rise toward where we stood. As soon as Don had seen the first one, he turned to go back to what he had been doing. Was there an element of worry added to his features? It was kind of like when he had been startled by that mean old bull and had quickly settled down from it, but a certain look had lingered. Big, strange trucks lumbered by, a dull, dark, greenish-gray paint on all of them. Some carried men in uniform, soldiers. Others had a tarp covering the open back. What they contained, we couldn't see, but some of their engines sounded louder than the others as they strained up the rise. Many had a variety of two-wheeled trailers behind them. Some had big cannons rolling on two wheels, and a few had even bigger cannons on four-wheel trailers. I tried to count them, but they took too long to pass by. As they came on, they seemed to drag the cloud bank lower and lower, as if they were bringing a storm with them. Reg and I had never seen an army on the move before. It was impressive in a threatening sort of way. Where were they going? And why were they going wherever they were going? The only other time that I had seen anything that was supposed to belong to the army was at the house on West Broadway so long ago. It was somewhere in another direction from the railroad tracks and the frighteningly overwhelming locomotive experience that we'd come across some long-eared horses. They were in a fenced pasture. The grass had been all eaten down, and with their long necks leaning over the top, they looked avidly at the tall grass on our side. We'd been told never to go near there, but somehow we had found ourselves there, once, looking, just looking. We decided that we wanted to help them, but when we tried, They almost came through the fence, or at least it seemed that way. I brought a bunch of grass to one, and he grabbed it quickly and yanked me right into the fence. I thought he was going to eat me too, along with the grass.
Oh, don't be such a crybaby, Brother Dave, Junie to us, teased. At the time, I didn't think that it was so funny, but he was always saying things like that. Just take the grass and throw it over the fence before you get to it, he added. I guess he was only trying to be helpful. Watch us, he continued. First he would throw some, then Gloria would, and the horses would gallop back and forth trying to be there first, just like us sometimes. I saw some really tall grass next to a small bridge not far away. I couldn't get close enough to pull any because they were in ground soggy with water that went under the bridge, but some were growing close to where the bridge went up. We'd been up there before. It had an old wooden railing, but Junie had said, "Just watch your step and everything will be okay." Some plants grew taller on the other side near the top, so I leaned over very carefully, grabbed one, and pulled it toward me. I could feel something in the plant give a little, so I grabbed down farther and gave a big yank. It came up out of the water so quickly that it sailed right over my head. I hadn't expected it to be so easy, and I stumbled backwards trying to catch my balance. Next thing I knew, wood was breaking, and there wasn't anything to step on. I fell. The shriek that came out of my mouth was so loud that it was all I could hear as I fell and fell and fell into the water right where it was deepest. I was underwater, struggling to come to the top. I couldn't swim, but I struggled mightily. It was dark down there, and I was afraid. Where was my brother? My head came out, and I was choking and gasping for air before I went down again. I didn't want to go there, so I struggled even harder. Again, just my eyes came above the water, but I saw. Junie was at the top and just dove in when he saw me. But I hadn't anything left to fight with, and I went down again. I just knew that I wouldn't be going home today. That awful blackness had finally gotten me and wouldn't let go. A memory of another time suddenly inserted itself. We were going to visit Uncle Jim and his sick wife. He had a daughter, too, big like him, or maybe like Junie. He had said that she wasn't quite right and we weren't to trust her, but she seemed to be kind of nice. And she seemed to like me. She showed me all the flowers in her yard and wanted me to smell each one, just like she was doing. Some of them smelled so good. Others had no smell at all, but she made like they did, and wanted me to do the same as she did. It was like a game, until I came to one that smelled bad, and I, unlike her, turned up my nose. She saw this and got angry quickly. She wanted me to play the game. She pushed my head down to that awful smelling thing so strongly that I couldn't get away. She scared me, and I guess that I started to cry. Just as quickly, she pulled me up and pleaded, "Please don't cry, you'll get me into trouble. There's flowers in the house that all smell good. Come on, I'll show you." She had gotten good just as quickly as she had gotten angry, and so I followed her, at a little distance this time. We went past the grown-ups who were visiting, and then down a short hall. She disappeared into a room on her right. Stepping through the doorway, I suddenly saw that it was a bedroom, and I was smacked in the face with something like a pillow. It pressed into and around my face. I reared back, but she was right behind me, pushing me forward till I flopped onto something like a bed. My face was buried deeply into that suffocating pillow, and a heavy weight was in the middle of my back. I tried to yell, but nothing came out. My mind screamed in a fear as elemental as life itself, but the sound of it couldn't even get as far as my mouth. My arms beat upon the bed, and my legs thrashed around into a nothingness. I couldn't breathe. I couldn't breathe. I couldn't breathe. Something like hands grabbed at me, and I was pushed. Suddenly it was my brother, and he pulled me to dry land and flopped me down on my stomach. I coughed and gagged,
but I could breathe. He had saved me. My brother had saved me, again, like before, from smothering. Gloria was right. He could do almost anything. But the water smelled bad, and it tasted bad, and now we both reeked with an awful stench. But Gloria was close by, too, anxiously, agitatedly humming the fright of her imagination. I could see it in her eyes. She had despaired of getting to me in time. And now she hummed her favorite little tune nervously, but it sounded awful good to me. Junie said it would be all right. We would find a hose and wash everything off. I didn't care that it made me cold enough to shiver. Right now, anything that he did was okay with me. I wanted to tell the whole world what he had done, again. But he suggested that it might be better if that was just kept as our little secret. The sun had dried us off by the time that we got home. Our secret was safe, or so we thought. It was odd how memories just seemed to pop into your head sometimes. The trucks had almost finished going by, and three cars followed behind the whole procession with small flags on short posts shivering their way down the road. War had come. I hadn't known what it would look like until now.